Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody, to Parshas Shemos. We begin a new book. We're back from a week break, a winter break, and it's a good time because we begin the second book of the Torah, and we're also at the very beginning of a new approach because our trip of the 48 Ways to Wisdom lasted into this year, and we just completed it 2 weeks ago. So we're really starting our new approach now. And the new approach is, with God's help, we'll call it Torah's Chaim. It's the living Torah. There should be a meaningful and a relevant message for any Jew who opens up the Torah. And I'm going to try to find something like that every week in the Parsha. And let's move on now to Parsha's Shemos. There was some little chit-chat that we do before class, and people were bringing things up. It was mentioned by Hannah that we're the Marines. The Jews are the Marine Corps of the world. Perry is talking about certain anti-Semitic movements in earlier years. That's what we're going to get into now. Just who are we, the Jewish people, in the world? Our frame of reference is the way that the Jewish people developed in their standing in the Egyptian culture post-Joseph and his brothers. The opening lines of the Parsha are well known. In verse 6, it states, Vayomas Yosef v'chol echa v'chol hador hahu. Yosef died, all of his brothers, and that entire generation, the generation that came to Mitzrayim years before with Yaakov, they were still the bearers of the torch of the patriarchs, and as long as they were alive, the Jewish people had a very strong identity as sons of Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. But that generation was gone now. Uvnei Yisrael Poru vayishritzu vayirbu vayatzmu bimeod meod vatimolei haaretz osam. And the children of Israel were fruitful, teemed, increased, and became strong, very, very much so. And the land became filled with them. What image does this portray? There's a new book out from the sons of Rebbetzin Jungreis. And it has, she's the editor, so it has a lot of post-Holocaust, overtones. These verses reveal the seeds of anti-Semitism. The tribal patriarchs, the Zaydis, the entire generation who kept the nation anchored to their faith, died. At the same time, the Jewish people increased, multiplied in great numbers, spread out all over Egypt, and became part of the Egyptian culture. And with that acculturation, we encounter the beginnings of anti-Semitism. Indeed, the Torah continues, Vayaka melech chadash al Mitzrayim asher lo yada es Yosef. A new king arose over Egypt who did not know of Joseph. And more on that in just a moment. But the Midrash tells us that the Jewish people were having a conversation in this new period of time. The Midrash says, quoting a verse in Hosea of the 12 minor prophets. The verse says, and listen to the entire passage of the Midrash. It begins with the verse, Pashem bagadu, kivanim zarim yoladu, ata yochleim chodesh eschel kehem. They have dealt treacherously against the Lord, for they have begotten alien children. Now a month will devour their portions. Midrash says as follows. When Joseph died, the Jewish people stopped doing bris milah, circumcision. They said, Nihiyet Kamitriyim. Let's be like the Egyptians. The Kevan Sha'asu Kain, when they began to do this, Hafach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ha'ava, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Holy One, blessed be He, turned the love, Shehayu HaMitzriyim Ohavino Son, the love that heretofore the Egyptians had for the Jewish people, L'sina, into hatred. Shenemar, and the Midrash cites a verse in Tehillim, Psalms, chapter 105, verse 25. Hafach libom lisno amo, lihisna keil ba'avadov. He turned their hearts to hate his nation, to plot against his servants. This is what the Midrash says. And that followed a laxity, easing of Jewish identity. Listen in to a conversation now, also from the Midrash, in this week's Parsha, between Paro and his advisors, his cabinet. So the Midrash says, to follow this idea of turning the love into hate, the rabbis expounded, why does the Torah say that there arose a new king over Egypt? Certainly, this was the same Pharaoh that had known Joseph. And there's different interpretations about this, but this particular opinion considers the Pharaoh to be the same man. Ella, rather, this is the explanation to the verse. Amru amitriim lefaro. The Egyptians said to Pharaoh, the advisors, Bo'u v'nizdaveg l'umazu. Let's take action against this nation. Omar lahem, Pharaoh spoke up and said to them, Shoti matem, you fools! Adachshav mishalahem anu ochlim. All these years we've been eating out of their hands, so to speak. Heich nizdaveg lahem. How can we possibly take action against this nation? Ilule Yosef lo hayinu chayim. After all, if not for Joseph, we wouldn't even be alive. We all want to stand up and cheer for this Pharaoh, right? Kevan shalo shama lohem, when the cabinet members saw that he didn't listen to them, horiduhu mikiso, they impeached him. They denounced him from his rulership. Gimul chadashim, for 3 months he was deposed. Ad sh'amar lohem, until he reconsidered and he missed. He missed his throne. Kol ma she'atem rotzim, hareini imachem. Whatever you want, I'll be with you. Ve'yishivu oso. And they said, very well, you can go back onto the throne. This is the Midrash, citing the insights. We just didn't make it to the front page of the journal. L'fichach kesiv hayakom melech hadash. This is the meaning of the verse, and a new king arose. After 3 months, he had a change of heart.
What Midrash?
Midrash Rabbah, the most common, or the Midrash. Rashi always quotes the Midrash Rabbah. There's others too, but that's the primary source of Midrash that we have. What I think we see from all of these sources that we've just quoted is two things. One of them is from our standpoint, and the other one is from the standpoint of the host nation. From our standpoint, if we think that a key to our success is assimilating into the culture because things are good, they like us, we have good relations, and we have a lot to contribute, which is true, if we think that doing that at the expense of holding on to our Jewish identity is a good thing, we should learn from Torah and from history that that just is not so. That the greatest, the ugly eye of anti-Semitism arises precisely when the Jews start to assimilate and slacken off on our identity. And we should also realize that we're not talking about gross assimilation. A lot of people have heard, also the Midrash say, that the Jews were actually very proud and very identified Jewishly. They distinguished themselves from Egyptians in 4 categories. None of them would give a child a non-Jewish name. in this period of time when the Jews are, quote, assimilating, they're still holding on to their Jewish names. Further, they did not switch to the language of the country, but continued speaking Lashon HaKodesh, the holy tongue. They did not dress according to Egyptian styles. And they practiced kindness with each other and would not betray a fellow Jew to the Egyptians. That's why that one incident in the Torah was an absolute aberration. So the Jews are still very strong, and yet, because they think maybe we shouldn't do the circumcision, that is considered to be assimilation, and God already turns the tables, and the Egyptians start to hate. So that's number one. Number one is assimilation. It does not get us peace and harmony with our neighbors, just the opposite. And number two, what we learn is we just can't trust our friends. We cannot trust our friends. Here, Paro is sticking up for the Jews out of allegiance, out of a sense of gratitude. And how long does his allegiance last? How long does his gratitude last? Only until it starts becoming a little uncomfortable for him. And then he's happy to change his policy. So we have to realize that kind of trust just is not there. Now, I'm well aware of the fact that, you know, thank God I'm American born, and even my parents, my mother's American born, my father was an immigrant, but from a young age, and we don't like to talk about anti-Semitism, at least overt, at least in the sense of the European era and so forth. We like to think that it couldn't happen here or whatever. And I'm not here to get up on a podium and say, beware. Now, there may be plenty to talk about that, but that's not my main message here. But I want to take this in a different direction, but related. Does it seem reasonable to you that just as we are learning from here that we can't trust our neighbors for them always to be our friends and to stick up for us, we also cannot trust our neighbors for morality? I think that most Jews who live in America consider themselves to be Americans and are proud of that, because we consider our country to be a very civilized place, a country that was founded on principles of justice, of freedom, where rights are vigilantly protected. And there is in the early the founding fathers of our country, there was a reverence for God. In God we trust. And there's even Hebrew, and we were talking about some of the universities. The Yale University, I think, had Hebrew on their coat of arms. And so I think that a lot of us feel that even on a spiritual/moral basis, we are fine to be living in this land, living in this world, and we kind of depend on that. We rely on that. And that, in a sense, frees us up from having to turn to Judaism for our morality, because we've got it right here in our country. This is the issue that I think we should think about and take a look at, a hard look. And unfortunately, we don't have to look so far to find out that we can't rely on that either. Just from current events, did any of you read the commentary by Ben Stein, a CBS commentator? If you don't mind, I want to read it to you, because it's just very, very well written. And Ben Stein is a Jewish commentator on CBS Sunday Morning. And this was circulated by various people, but you can Google it. Ben Stein's remarks on CBS on Sunday Morning: a little sanity, please. Only hope we find God again before it is too late. My confession: I don't like getting pushed around for being a Jew, and I don't think Christians like getting pushed around for being Christians. I think people who believe in God are sick and tired of getting pushed around, period. I have no idea where the concept came from that America is an explicitly atheist country. I can't find it in the Constitution, and I don't like it being shoved down my throat. Or maybe I can put it another way. Where did the idea come from that we should worship celebrities? We're not allowed to worship God as we understand Him. I guess that's a sign that I'm getting old, too. But there are a lot of us who are wondering where these celebrities came from and where the America we knew went to. In light of the many jokes we send to one another for a laugh, this is a little different. This is not intended to be a joke. It's not funny. It's intended to get you thinking. In light of recent events, terrorist attacks, school shootings, this came out after the incident in Connecticut. I think it started when Madeline Murray O'Hare, she was murdered, her body found a few years ago, complained she didn't want prayer in our schools. And we said, okay. Then someone said, you better not read the Bible in school. The Bible says, thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal, and love your neighbor as yourself. And we said, okay. Then Dr. Benjamin Spock said that we shouldn't spank our children when they misbehave, because their little personalities would be warped and we might damage their self-esteem. In parentheses, Dr. Spock's son committed suicide. I didn't know that. We said an expert should know what he's talking about, and we said, okay. Now we're asking ourselves why our children have no conscience, why they don't know right from wrong, why it doesn't bother them to kill strangers, their classmates, and themselves. Probably, if we think about it long and hard enough, we can figure it out. I think it has a great deal to do with we reap what we sow. Yeah. Funny how simple it is for people to trash God and then wonder why the world's going to hell. Funny how we believe what the newspapers say but question what the Bible says. Funny how you can send jokes through email and they spread like wildfire, but when you start sending messages regarding the Lord, people think twice about sharing. Funny how lewd, crude, vulgar, and obscene articles pass freely through cyberspace, but public discussion of God is suppressed in the school and workplace. Are you laughing yet? Funny how when you forward this message, you will not send it to many on your address list because you're not sure what they believe or what they will think of you for sending it. Funny how we can be more worried about what other people think of us than what God thinks of us. Pass it on if you think it has merit. If not, then just discard it. No one will know you did. But if you discard this thought process, don't sit back and complain about what bad shape the world is in. My best regards, honestly and respectfully, Ben Stein. So, let's realize, where can we find morality? Where can we put our trust? And there, once again, we don't have to look far. We are God's people. We're the people of the book. And the book, the Torah, is the source of morality for the entire world. For the entire world. And that's our heritage. Rav Noach Weinberg ended off the last class, way number 50, Rewards of Gratitude. I just want to read this again because it's so powerful. Gratitude to the Jewish people. Make a list of society's treasures. Monotheism, justice for all, universal education, dignity of the individual, preciousness of life. These core values of the civilized world are all from the Torah. Before the Torah was given, people built their lives on a subjective concept of right and wrong. Then at Mount Sinai, human history underwent a dynamic shift. People understood that there is one God who has moral expectations. You can't just live as you please. There is a higher authority you are accountable to. Despite the fact that Jews were never more than a tiny fraction of the world's population, these ideas became the basis for the civilized world. For example, do you know the source of the idea, love your neighbor as yourself? It's in the five books of Moses, Leviticus 19:18. The Jewish people are an eminent, firm, 3,500 years old. We are no fly-by-night. The world uses our products under different brand names and takes it for granted. Consider what humanity owes to the Jewish people. If you are living with Jewish wisdom, know it, quote it, and give credit. That's who we are. That's what we can depend on. Because behind the book, the author is still there. And he was there for the Jews in Egypt. And that's really all he wanted them to discover through Egypt, is that they cannot depend on Pharaoh. They cannot depend on their Egyptian neighbors. But they can depend on God. And that's who we are. So the message is, let's celebrate who we are. Let's not run anywhere else, because there really isn't any other place to run. Let us embrace the fact that we have been blessed to be part of this eternal nation. We have been given the eternal book of morality. It will always be there, and its author will always be there too. Let us walk away strengthened in who we are as Jews. And thank you for listening.
Can I say a few words?
Please.
As far as Matos, you're talking, Yale has four in the two.
Really?
That's what's on the Yale Matos. At Harvard.
Representing wisdom, I suppose.
Yeah. At Harvard, they have Veritas, which means truth in Latin. At Brandeis, they had Emmis. And then, when they got a new director of Brandeis, she wanted to take it off. There was such an uproar that they finally put it back. It's not Veritas, it's Emmis. True.
Oh, so it is still there?
It's still there.
Wow.
That's at Brandeis. The other thing has to do with circumcision.
Yeah.
I once read a book by dentists called X-Raying the Pharaohs, in which they x-rayed pharaohs. And they found that the pharaohs
were circumcised.
Now, Herodotus, who wrote about 450 BC, he said that the Egyptians got circumcision, or the idea of circumcision, from the Canaanites, would be the Jews. So circumcision has a long history.
Really?
The English royal family does it, I believe.
So who does?
The royal. Is
that right? Really?
Family, yeah.
Oh, do they?
Oh, yeah.
I think they use them
well. Yeah, they use them well.
A Jewish male?
Yes.
Wow.
Third comment had to do with adapting, assimilating. When the Jews had massive conversions and became Spaniards in the 1300s and 1400s, it didn't help. From the Gornish Health. That's where they kicked all the Jews out of Spain.
Yeah.
When in Germany and Austria, aren't you Austrian?
Czechoslovakian.
Okay.
Close enough.
That's when all of a sudden the Jews started to assimilate. That's when they got
out. Yeah.
That's where they had.
In Germany too.
And the fourth thing had to do with what's on the Liberty Bell?
Oh, also a quote from Leviticus.
Proclaim 25 throughout the world.
Yeah, throughout the land. Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah. Very good. Okay. Anyone else, Hannah?
Yeah. We had a really incredible experience at the Marine Corps Museum. And I, for a short period of time in 1972, went to Officer Kennedy School at Quantico headquarters at Marine. And we saw a movie about Marines, and the focus, the dedication, everything. I thought, this is what we're meant to be. This is, we're supposed to train ourselves for this. And I went back, a friend of mine, when he heard that I was in the Marine Corps, said, well, what did you learn there? I said, well, we learned all sorts of stuff, and I found the notebook with all this stuff. And there's a whole section on what it means to be a leader. And I read this, I read it over to Gershon this morning. It is so, the meat that we've been learning here, it talks about bearing, holding yourself a certain way, dressing a certain way, so that other people see you with respect, act in a certain way that other people see you with respect. It says, learn from everybody, learn from other people's mistakes, make decisions, and go through with them. And he said it's better to make a decision and go with it and be wrong than not to make a decision at all. And it was just so, and it talks about Zerizus and all this other kind of stuff. And I'm sitting there going,
wow.
This, I need to read this every month at least to see this is what we're supposed to be. We're meant to be leaders.
I'm waiting for somebody to come up with a gematria, like Marine is the gematria of Eben Hashem or something.
One thing you did mention about the Marines, you know, we have this thing, everybody has rights. We have this right and that right. I think the Jewish feelings are, it's not so much as that we have rights, as that we have
obligations
and duties.
That's an important, important distinction.
That's one nice thing about the Marine Corps. They always look out for their buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've got
this one guy on the movie said, you know, everybody thinks we're thinking about mom and dad and home when we're out there. We're thinking about the guy next to us because he's who's keeping us alive.
Uh-huh.
And there was one young man over in the Middle East. They got ambushed. He got his arms blown off and his leg shot. And he's sitting there going, I need to put a tourniquet on my leg. I don't have any arms to do it with. I don't have any arms to shoot with. What can I do? I can give orders. I can see what's going on. I can tell somebody else, watch out for the guy over there, watch out for the guy over there. And he kept his mind and kept saying, watch over here, till the medics got him and took him away. And his commanding officer said, how come you didn't pass out or go into shock? He said,
I had too much to do.
I mean, that is living every moment. That's what we're supposed to be doing as Jews.
Almost. How do you say rights in Hebrew?
Zechuyot. Zechuyot.
No, that's rights?
Yeah.
No, that's...
Like you get from the government, you get, if you make aliyah, you get money for a mortgage. It's a zechuyot. Or you get health insurance. Barda?
I love it. You do it. You're so great. You help set up everything I want to write down and I want to say. So it's just a great segue for me. I see us that we fluctuate. The Jewish people, talking about Marines, we become watered down or we're watered up.
Mm-hmm.
And the Torah itself is, our water, yes. And when you were talking about in holding, where they're holding. I mean, that's what God says to us in Bereshit from the very beginning. He says, where are you holding? Where are you holding? So I just look at us, I see us that we're either the enemy or we're the salvation. Because when I look at the world in toto, I don't see the world looking at anybody else other than the Jewish people. And that we're the ones.
Mm.
We're the ones that everybody looks to see. Well, where are you holding?
Mm.
Mm.
Because where we're holding constitutes where the rest of the world sees itself. And we have this huge responsibility and obligation. And it's not just to us and our people. It's to the whole.
There's a very deep comment about the providence of Hashem that. The reason why he sets up this system that when Israel starts to assimilate, the non-Jews turn their wrath towards us. The deep Kabbalists or whatever rabbinic commentators say that God set that up as a safety net because we've got to remain Jews. And if we forget it, they're going to remind us so that we cannot go into oblivion. That's why God set it up that way, a safety net that we will not forget that we are Jews. Either we'll remember it on our own, or if not, they'll remind us. Tina?
I find the whole discussion makes me very, very sad and depressed and so on. And figured out why. It's because so many Jews have no idea what it means to be Jewish.
Mm-hmm.
I like when in a class, things are talking to the individual, you know, to me, you know, then it inspires me. But talking about the Jewish people, you know, is one thing. All I think of is that most of them have no idea what it means to be Jewish.
Well, Yeah, it is sad, you know. But on the other hand, let us, those of us who know, let us be there and let us be ready to reach out to people who are looking around the world and saying, where can we turn? Who can we trust? Where are we going to get that, you know, sense of morality that we thought was coming from our country? And we're not so sure about that anymore. Where can we find it? Let us be there to proudly carry our banner that we found Torah and we think that it gives our lives a sense of purpose and belonging. And just, you're one of us. And let's be there for them. Yeah. I mean, we have to do that. That's our response. That's our, and that doesn't have to be, that can be something very positive and optimistic, because if we feel that we're strong, then we can help others. And that's how we should think about it.
Okay,
yes.
Did you say that that Mrs. Youngrace has specific commentary on Shmuel?
Apparently, her sons have put together, maybe part of from her teachings. My friend Alan Smirin, who is helping me with this approach, he brought in yesterday, I saw it, I forgot the name of it, but it's got the names of two of Rabbi Youngrace's sons on it, and then at the bottom it says, edited by Esther Youngrace. But I can't tell you the name. I guess I bet if you Google it, you could find it. And she's still going strong. I just saw an advertisement that she's coming to speak in Baltimore in the next couple of weeks. I mean, this is a woman, must well in her 80s, who boy, she can pack a lecture hall, and she can, and her nonstop fire. Perry.
It's just really interesting historically that Hungary and Rebsen Jungreich is an example too of Jews who were absolutely observant but very modern, very very modern. You look at her, everything from her shaitol, everything
very
else
stylishly.
I mean, some people say they dress down, she absolutely does not. Right. If anything, she's a fashion plate.
Uh-huh.
But Hungary was a place where they did have a lots of assimilation, but they obviously had Jews who were not assimilated. Hungary, right after World War II, is exactly when something called numerus clausus was instituted. That means in Latin a closed number. To us, that means quota. And
mm-hmm.
it came from Hungary, and it came into Germany, and then it mm-hmm. went to England, and then it came to our
it started in Hungary?
It was the place where they had more of it than any place else. So many Jews after in the 20s accessed the higher education there, that suddenly these people who were tolerating it for a certain while just found us too ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, you should be ambitious.
Yeah, right. Right. Like, I'm sorry.
Well,
you know,
I know.
We're supposed to apologize
for
being high achievers.
You have to really understand, and that's what really happened is, in Jewish circles, many times there was dialogue between them and the non-Jews were telling them, look, we value everything you've done, but it's not going to be good for you when you excel to a certain point. It's going to hurt you.
Mm.
Don't you understand that? And they did understand it, and so they didn't say anything, and they let those numbers hold.
Mm-hmm.
If they hadn't, it would have happened even quicker. They would have gotten up to 75%. It was over 50% in Germany. Over 50% of the lawyers in Berlin were Jewish. And in 1933, with the Nuremberg Laws, they either had to leave the country or ultimately they were all killed. So it's really difficult to comment on those things because it's nobody knows what to do with it.
Right. And I don't want to, this is not a scare, anti-Semitism scare. The angle that I wanted to take this in was, let's take the opportunity, you know, they're related topics. You know, there's, you know, also the rabbis say that the exile either presents itself in anti-Semitism or just in anti-spirituality. Both of them are our nemesis. So let us, let us enjoy the freedom from persecution that we have in this country, at least overtly. And I'm not saying that we don't have, but that, you know, that's not our, we're not here hiding from a Holocaust now, and hopefully never, but we do have to confront the dearth of spiritual values in a modern society, and we have to realize that we've got the real thing, and we don't wave that in people's faces. We see it not as a right, but as an obligation, as a responsibility to the world, that it has to start from home. And let us be, you know, humble, truth-seeking, righteous Jews, and we will raise the world as we have.
Well, we'll have to turn down all those Nobel Prizes and all that for them not to be jealous. Yeah. The problem is that if you do excel, there are problems there. But if you don't have children, or if you don't have Jews that are doing all those things, they're not going to be able to fund a lot of these other things that are done. And
well,
I don't have to say any more about that.
Let's just make sure that we excel in morality. You know, because we're not beyond reproach there. Let's make sure that when they look at us, they say, you know, these Jews are high achievers, but boy, do they stand for their principles. And that we have to introspect on that. Yeah, Dr. Schultz.
You say that our Torah is the source of morality, which is such a basic statement. But yet, all the major figures of the Torah are flawed. On their character. And they're not paragons of virtue. Joseph's brothers threw him in a pit.
Right.
And there are all sorts of other transgressions. So where did the moral values spring from?
One of the greatest proofs that the Torah was written by God is because we don't hide our flaws.
That's the animal, human aspect of us. But the spiritual thing is what's supposed to triumph and win over.
Right.
But our heroes are all flawed.
Our heroes
have overcome.
They have flaws, but they come back. They admit. David is our hero because David said, "I sinned." Joseph and his brothers, they went through a terrible ordeal for 20 odd years, and at the end, they each acknowledge the other one, and they made up. So the Torah is even instructive on how flawed people can still strive towards perfection. And that's the morality. We're not angels. We were not made as angels. And the morality comes from striving. I think that's one of your favorite words, is striving.
Striving for truth. Right.
There it is. That's the morality inherent in the Torah.
Isn't that what's his name? Yaakov? He was a lying, cheating, no good. And then he had this struggle with the angel, and he all of a sudden became...
Well, we don't think he was lying and cheating. We think that he was fighting crookedness with cunning. But we don't think that Yaakov was unjustified.
Was right?
Yeah. No, well, there's a lot of things that we don't understand in the Torah, but we have to study them. Dan, did you want to add something? Okay. Yes, Barda.
And you said balance. It's interesting. For us, balance in the Torah falls into its layers and layers and layers of the number 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3. And the world is built on three legs.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the three brothers. And that's how we maintain the balance.
Mm-hmm.
Through this number 3.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
3.6
on the 26.
Yeah, I have some of this. There's no difference. This gentleman says Yaakov is a liar,
mm-hmm.
and he's correct. And you say, "Oh, he uses cunning."
Okay.
And so, I mean, you are. I mean, he is correct, and
I'm defending
people it. Will say that you are not correct.
I'm right.
That you're trying to glaze over
uh-huh.
by using this metaphor of cunning, and that's the problem. When you don't have an educated Jew who can understand where Yaakov's mother said, God told her to do this.
Okay.
Like, I mean, so it's a in a general population, it's very difficult.
Right.
Because a lot of people would say what you said.
Right.
That Yaakov was just a liar.
But he struggled and he converted.
Well, no, they all struggled.
And I have to edit this, so.
I'm going to have
three versions.
Dianu.
You can pick the one you want.
All right. Do we have to convert the world?
No.
We have to improve ourselves from within.
Bingo. The latter. The latter.
Okay. We've got a couple of hours to figure it out.
Okay. Yashikoa. Thank you all.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.